provide you with some information about crystal lattices. And second, I will talk about Bloch's theorem. I will give a complete proof of Bloch's theorem that will allow us to understand what happens if electrons are placed in the periodic potentials. As I mentioned on my first lecture, there are certain approximations one can use in order to solve the problem of electron motion in solids, crystals, and other periodic structures. The first approximation was to consider electrons completely free. Now we're going to move to the next step and consider more complicated approximation in which single electron moves in the potential created by ions that form periodic structure and possibly other electrons that are located closer to the ions. This is the so-called effective potential approximation. But before I write down the corresponding Hamiltonian once again, in fact, you saw this Hamiltonian on the first lecture, I will give you some information about crystal lattices. So let's imagine that we have a system of ions located periodically in space. So there are quite many lattices one can imagine in nature, and their classification is very complicated. So whenever I talk about lattices, I will be illustrating all the terminology based on two-dimensional lattices simply because they are easier to visualize. But if you want, you can easily generalize the basic notion of crystal lattices to three-dimensional case. So let's start. Some information about crystal lattices. The simplest lattice one can imagine in two dimensions, well, in one dimension, everything is quite simple. You have just a chain of atoms and the distance between all of these atoms, between the neighboring atoms is the same. So in two dimensions, we can introduce the so-called Bravais lattice. So BL, the abbreviation used is BL, is the lattice in which the neighborhood of each site is the same. So if we imagine, say, the square lattice then we can easily see that if we look at the neighborhood of each site here, we see that it will be the same. Each point is represented, typically it is denoted by large R, in the following way. N1 vector A1 plus N2 A2 plus in three dimensions A3, where Ni are the integers. And Ai are called the primitive vectors. If we look in for the two-dimensional square lattice, then we can choose the primitive vectors this way, A1 and A2. It is important, however, to understand that while the primitive vectors must be linearly independent, independent. Their choice is not unique. Is not unique. This is very important because even for the square lattice, let me add one more column of sides, we can choose alternatively the primitive vectors as follows. Here, A1, and direct A2 along the diagonal of the square. In this case, A1 and A2 are also linearly independent. Let me erase this portion because I will need this figure further. If we look at this structure, then we can imagine that everything in this crystal, in fact, can be reconstructed. If we choose a certain space, in this case, a square, and in this case, probably a parallelogram, and translate this space throughout the crystal further. This is how we come to the notion of a primitive cell or unit cell. Sometimes it is called primitive cell, sometimes it is called unit cell, unit primitive cell. It is defined as volume of space, which if transported, by those vectors R, by vectors R belonging to the Bravo lattice, fills space with no voids. With no voids. So the choice of the primitive cell is also not unique. If we have these two primitive vectors, then we construct a square. And if we transport this square, say, to the right and up, we obtain the whole crystal structure. Similarly here, if we write this primitive cell as follows, if we draw it as follows, and we transport it either along the horizontal direction or along the direction of A2, then we reconstruct the whole crystal. So, moreover, the choice of a primitive cell is not unique. Is not unique and can be done in numerous ways. But it is essential that each primitive cell contains exactly one atom in the Bravais lattice. For instance, if we have a square lattice. Just if you have any question, try to interrupt me immediately because it's a very important material. So if we have a square lattice, let me draw the atoms once again, then the primitive cell can be chosen in many ways. For example, if we draw the lines connecting the sides, then we choose this as a primitive cell. So each primitive cell contains, roughly speaking, one quarter of each side located at the corner. But we can choose the primitive cell this way. We can choose the primitive cell in such a way that in each of the cells, say, the atom occupies upper left corner. One can choose a primitive cell this way as well. However, people work with primitive cells that are most symmetric. And this is how we come to the notion of the so-called Wigner Zeitz cell. This is the cell that respects the full symmetry of the lattice. So obviously, this primitive cell is more symmetric than this primitive cell. So this is a better candidate for being a Wigner-Zeitz cell than this one. However, there is a specific prescription how to build Wigner-Zeitz cells. So let's look once again at the same square lattice. And draw the primitive vectors that respect from the very beginning the symmetry of the lattice. So A2 here and A1. Well, the symmetry of the lattice is respected because A1's rotated by 90 degrees. So A1 goes to A2 and A2 goes to minus A1. So obviously this is the most symmetric choice. But Wigner-Zeitz cell has the additional property that each lattice point in space must be closer to only one side. So if we, for example, look at this point of space, then we see that it is closer to this side. If we look at the neighborhood of this point, then all points here are closer to this side. So the prescription to build Wigner-Zeitz cell is as follows. Let me take the red chalk. We look at the primitive vector and cut it in half by the line perpendicular to it. Then let's look at the vector minus A1 and also cut it in half by the line perpendicular to minus A1. Then we look at A2, look at the point that cuts A2 in half, and draw the line perpendicular to A2. The figure may be a little bit too small for some of you. Then look at minus A2, and do the same. Draw the line that is perpendicular to minus A2 and crosses it at the central point. So what lies inside this square will be the Wigner-Zeitz cell. For more complicated lattices, the procedure is the same. We take all the primitive vectors, take the vectors that come with the minus sign, cut them in half. In three dimensions, we will cut them in half by the planes. In two dimensions, we cut them in half by lines. In two dimensions, they cut their certain volume that is two-dimensional. In three dimensions, they will cut three-dimensional volume, probably in the form of some kind of complicated multihedron. But their prescription is the same for all lattices. So if you look at all points inside the square, then, and there is probably a mathematical proof for this based on some geometric consideration. So if you look inside the square, then it can be shown that each point inside the square is closer to this side rather than the neighboring sides. Any questions at this point? So it is important to distinguish between a primitive cell and Wigner-Zeitz cell. Victor Zeitz cells are very convenient when we study the properties, the energy spectrum of electrons moving in periodic potentials. But this is later. And for now, I should mention that there are five types of lattices in two dimensions that are called Bravais lattices. Namely, each point of a Bravais lattice can be represented in the form written above. Primitive vectors multiplied by integers. However, only few Bravais lattices are realized in nature, and very few real crystals are described by Bravais lattices. Quite often, the crystal structures of solids is much more complicated. For example, let's imagine the lattice called honeycomb lattice. Sorry. Honeycomb lattice. Let me draw the cell. Oh, there are so many dots here that it is not very easy to draw things. Then when one can move here, and here, sides. Here, side here. Here, side here. So honeycomb lattice. This is not a Bravais lattice. This means that the points of this lattice cannot be represented in this form, where A1 and 2 some kind of vectors that are linearly independent. Then the question is, what's this? And to clarify this situation, let me mention. So there are five types of Bravais lattices that are possible in two dimensions. These are square, rectangular, centered rectangular. I will not write down the names. You can look in the textbooks. Then hexagonal or equilateral triangular and oblique. Oblique one is the least symmetric of all five. So let's consider the so-called hexagonal or equilateral triangular. Equilateral triangular. Wrong. Let us go this way. Right, yes. Side here, side here, side here. Right, side here, side here. This is the crossing point. I can also imagine this. So this is the hexagonal lattice, and the primitive vectors can be constructed this way. This is A1. This is A2. A1 and A2. So, and this is the primitive cell. So this is the most symmetric structure. Why? Because A1 can be transformed into A2 by rotation by 60 degrees. So if we look at this honeycomb lattice and label the site as follows. This is site belonging to one sublattice, this side belonging to the other. This is the side presumably belonging to the same sublattice as this side. Then this side also belongs to the same sublattice. Then the sides which stand in between presumed to be belonging to the other sublattice, and so forth. This is, say, a yellow side. This is a blue side. This is a blue side. This is a yellow side. This is a yellow side. This is a yellow side. This is blue side. This is blue side. This is blue side. This is, again, a yellow side. So if we look carefully at the location of the yellow sides and look carefully where the blue sides are located, then we can conclude that all yellow sides form the hexagonal lattice and all blue sides form the other hexagonal lattice. So yeah, indeed. Anyway, it's not very easy. Not very easy to draw, but say this way. Then, yeah. Okay. So my drawing was not very successful. So when I prepared the lecture notes, I made the better drawing. But believe me, this is true. Hexagonal lattice is not the Bravais lattice, but a lattice with the bases. Not hexagonal, but honeycomb lattice is not the Bravais lattice, but the lattice with the bases is the lattice with the bases. The lattice with the bases implies that the Bravais lattice for the honeycomb lattice is only one lattice out of two, while the other portion of atoms belongs to the other Bravais lattice. So in order to think about the primitive cell, we should draw two sublattices, and only one of them will be characterized in this form, while the other will obtain from the first one by some kind of a shift. So this is what I mean by the lattice with the bases. So here we have two atoms per unit cell, not one atom. So if we have more than one atom per unit cell, then the corresponding lattice is not a Bravais lattice, but something more complicated. So quite often we have the compounds, the crystals that are comprised of different kinds of atoms, each located at the corners of one Bravais lattice, while the atoms belonging to the other atoms are located in the other shifted Bravais lattice. So the real crystals are typically the Bravais lattices inserted one into the other. A good example of honeycomb lattice is graphene. You will study the energy spectrum of graphene tomorrow during your tutorial. Example, graphene. Yep, yes. Yes, yes, exactly. Okay, any questions at this point? So let me move the board up. Now I will talk about the following: a reciprocal lattice. And first, Brillouin's law.
first brilliant zone.
The definition is the following. Vector k constitute the reciprocal lattice, and the abbreviation is RL. BL is the Brauer lattice, while RL is the reciprocal lattice. If for a given Brauer lattice, so R belonging to Brauer lattice, one has the following condition. E in power I k large, the very important thing that the vectors of reciprocal lattice are denoted by large k. I k r large is equal to 1. Reciprocal lattice is defined only when we have the Brauer lattice in the coordinate space. And reciprocal lattice is also Brauer lattice in momentum space. In momentum space. Yes. You're saying that you mean if you have a periodic function, then its expansion contains the reciprocal lattice vectors, right? Yeah, that's true. Yes. Yeah. You can say that. Yes. Yes, but this is just the basic definition. So whenever you have the regular lattice, then you can define the reciprocal lattice. So sometimes people say the dual lattice in this form. So it is also a Brauer lattice in momentum space. And since it's a Brauer lattice, then it can be represented as follows. K large equal to, so in D dimensions, I will write this as follow. I ranging from 1 to D of some numbers, integer numbers ki times bi. So bi's form the basis. So, and ki's are integers. There is a not very rigorous mathematical proof that it's better to say an illustration of the fact that all reciprocal lattice vectors can be chosen in this form. The reason for this is that The reason is that whenever we have bi and aj satisfying these relations, and in fact, bi's can be determined from these relations, 2 pi delta ij. So whenever we have these important relations that allows us to determine the reciprocal lattice vectors, if we know the basis of the original lattice. So the reason is that if we have this relation and R in D dimensions is equal by this expression and I, AI, then K dot R is equal to 2 pi times the sum from I between 1 and D of Ni Ki. So if Ni is an integer and Ki is an integer, then this is the whole integer. Hence, the exponent, this exponent is automatically equal to 1 because what stands here is 2 pi I times some integer. So people quite often use this formula as a definition in the textbook. So sometimes they start with this expression that is equally useful. But this formula allows us to determine the reciprocal lattice vectors if we know the basis of the original lattice. And yes? So large R is the lattice in coordinate space.
Yeah, I was just wondering about the name for
that vector. K is called the reciprocal lattice vector. Yes. 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 Large K is always called the reciprocal lattice vector. Thank you. And BI are called the basis vectors or the generators of reciprocal lattice vectors. So let me give some formulas that will hopefully be useful to you when you do your exercises. How one can generate the basis for reciprocal lattice if we know the original lattice. In one dimension, we have the following. So suppose we have the chain of atoms and A, the basis of original lattice, well, is given by this small a times x, times the unit vector x. So this is the vector of original lattice. And in the momentum space, we also have one-dimensional lattice, but the reciprocal lattice vector, so take another check. B will be equal to 2 pi divided by A, also times the unit vector x. So, of course, A dot B will be equal to 2 pi. Everything is very simple. So in three dimensions, let me first write down what we have in three dimensions. Three dimension. We have the following. Down the road, I mentioned that the volume of the unit cell, if we have the set of three primitive vectors a1, a2, and a3 is given by the following expression known from linear algebra. a1 dot a2 cross a3. This is the vector product. This is the scalar product. Volume of the primitive cell. Of the original lattice. So if we know A1, A2, and A3, then B1, one of the reciprocal lattice vectors, is given by 2 pi divided by V times the cross product or the vector product of A2, A3. Yeah. 2 pi divided by V times the cross product of A2, A3. So analogous B2 can be obtained using cyclic permutations. 2 pi over V, A3, cross A1. And you can easily write down the expression for B3. Look, B1 is orthogonal to both A2 and A3. While B2 is orthogonal to A3 and A1. So this is what we have for an arbitrary Bravais lattice in three dimensions. Finally, in two dimensions, and this is also a very interesting result that can be easily verified. So 1 second. Front, middle, rear. So the this apparently, yeah. Yes, sorry. So in two dimensions, we also have, they say, the original square lattice. The volume of the primitive cell this time is equal to the absolute value of this cross product, A1 cross A2. So if this is A1, this is A2. And if we introduce the unit vector that points, say, at us that is perpendicular to the plane, then we will have that B1 is equal to pi divided by V times the cross product of Z cross A2. And B2 will be equal to pi divided by V of the cross product A1 times Z. So B1 should be orthogonal to A2 and B2 should be orthogonal to A1. So for the reciprocal lattice, so we can write, if we have the reciprocal lattice, that is also is a square lattice, if the original lattice is squared, we have these vectors B1 and B2. This is a useful prescription how to construct the reciprocal lattice vectors satisfying the definitions that I have just mentioned. If we have the original Bravais lattice characterized by the known basis. So you will need these formulas during tomorrow's tutorial when you consider the reciprocal lattice for graphene. And finally, I will mention the following. Since reciprocal lattice is a Bravais lattice, then we can also think about the Wigner-Zeitz cell for the reciprocal lattice. And the Wigner-Zeitz cell for the reciprocal lattice is called the first Brillouin zone. Wigner-Zeitz cell for reciprocal lattice is called the first Brillouin zone. The first Brillouin zone, after the name of the French scientist Brillouin, who did many experiments at the beginning of the century on solid bodies. The first Brillouin zone. The abbreviation is as follows, 1BZ. We have the prescription how to construct the Wigner-Zeitz cell for the original lattice. So we do absolutely the same for the reciprocal lattice. So suppose we have the, yeah, a bit small figure. So can you all see this figure? Yeah, okay. A bit small. So if we have this two reciprocal lattice vectors, and we want to construct the first Brillouin zone, we do the following. We again look at the reciprocal lattice vectors, cut them in halves with lines perpendicular to them. The same thing here. So this is the first Brillouin zone. Sorry for a small figure, I should have. First Brillouin zone for the square lattice. For the square lattice. If we have a one-dimensional chain right there, let me temporarily move the front board down. If we have this reciprocal lattice for a one-dimensional chain of atoms, then what will be the first Brillouin zone? We cut this vector of reciprocal lattice in half. Then look at the vector that has the same magnitude but points in the opposite direction. Cut it in half. So, and this will be our Brillouin zone. First Brillouin zone. For 1D chain. It ranges from minus pi over A to pi over A. Yes?
So when you wrote those formulas for basis vectors for the reciprocal lattices of various dimensional crystals, the diagrams you, well, the, you said that the 2D diagram that you drew was for the 2D square lattice.
Square, yes.
But do those formulae for the basis vectors generalize to other, the other of the five types of?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Only the forms of the Brillouin zones will be more complicated due to this prescription. How to construct them. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Any other questions? Because I'm done with, yes.
Will the shape of the Brillouin zone always be the same as the shape of the Brillouin zone?
No. No. This is true only for the square lattice. Yes, for the square and the oblique lattice. So oblique lattice is the lattice in which the basic vectors form the parallelogram. So the reciprocal lattice vector will also form the parallelogram, but at different angles, where we will be having different angles. So in this case, we can also say that the form will be the same. No, in general, even especially this is true for three-dimensional lattices. If we have a Bravais lattice in the original space and the first Brillouin zone, then in the reciprocal in the momentum space where we have the reciprocal lattice, the form of the Brillouin zone will be different and quite often quite complicated. And not easily even visualized. This is true, especially in three dimensions. Okay, sure. I will move this up again. So the case of a square lattice is the simplest case, and you can use this case as an example to illustrate all the terminology. So it is really important for you to know what the Bravais lattice is, what reciprocal lattice is, and how to construct Wigner-Zeith cell. And the fact that Wigner-Zeith cell for the reciprocal lattice is called the first Brillouin zone. So before I move to Bloch's theorem, I will just tell you about some useful relations that involve integration in the original coordinate space and the dual momentum space. So let me do the following. Let me erase probably this board. And tell you about some, this was here. and tell you about some useful relations that are very important when you do the calculations in condensed matter. When you work with momentum space in the presence of the lattice. So when I proved the block theory towards the end of this lecture, you will immediately see how important the first Brillouin zone is. And when people calculate the physical quantities for the crystal structures, they quite often do the integrals involving the momenta that lie only inside the Brillouin zone. So that's why I will tell you about some important but useful relations that involve integrals that contain momenta, some useful relations. First of all, you probably saw this integral. If Q and Q prime are momenta, well, in arbitrary, say in three dimensions, because we have the three-dimensional integral R momenta. So that are discrete. If we consider the particles moving in a box, say Lx, Ly, Lz, Li are integers, then if we look at this integral and integrate over volume, that is the three-dimensional box, L by L by L, then we will get that this integral is equal to the volume times the Kronecker delta symbol of Q and Q. So it is completely clear that if Q is equal to Q prime, then exponent is 1, and you just recover the volume. But a good exercise, to save time, I will not do this exercise. It's very simple. It is in my notes. Exercise check this, that this is zero if Q not equal to Q prime. The easiest way to see this is to do the integral explicitly and to do this first for a one-dimensional case. So as a consequence of this relation, if we have the function satisfying periodically conditions that I talked about during last lecture, we can expand it via Fourier. We can write down the Fourier expansion for this function. If psi as a function of R satisfies periodic boundary conditions P, B, C, and we can consider L by L by L box, then we have the following. Psi as a function of R can be written as a sum over all Fourier components, psi of Q, E in power I, Q dot R. And the reverse transformation is that psi is a function of the discrete Qs, that are given by these formulas, can be written as an integral d3r psi of r e in power minus iq r. and 1 over v in front. So this formula allows you to check the validity of these relations that are very important. It is important to make sure and to be consistent during the calculations with the location of this prefactor, 1 over v. So some people write here the square root and put 1 over 1 over 1 over square root of v in front of the directory transformation, but we will be using these notations. Then, let's assume that we have a Bravais lattice and we have the periodic function on the points of this Bravais lattice. Basically, consider the potential written that is periodic, mainly u of r equals u of r plus r large, where r belongs to Bravais lattice. The period is provided by r, and we have a primitive cell for our given Bravais lattice. So we can also imagine a site and draw the basic vectors towards the nearest neighbors, like we did this for the square lattice, say A1, A2. Then we can also write down the expansion of this function that is analogous to the Fourier expansion of these functions obeying the periodic boundary conditions for the case of a box. So we can write that u as a function of r is equal to the sum over all reciprocal lattice vectors, u of k large, e in power I k large dot r, here r small, while u of k is given by the following. Some prefactor I will comment on a bit later. D3r u of a e in power minus I k large dot r. The integral is taken over primitive cell only because of periodicity of our function. And the normalizing prefactor is 1 over v small, where v is the volume of the primitive cell, well, given in for two-dimensional case by this expression, 1 over v times this integral. Integration occurs only over the volume spanned by the primitive cell. And needless to say that a very good exercise will be to check these relations as well. They're slightly more complicated to check, but it will be a good exercise to check them. So in order to check them, one should use the certain property of one representation of the delta functions. But I will not be doing this. If you have questions and would like to ask me how to check these relations, I will be happy to show you. It's quite a beautiful exercise. Okay, now we will move towards the last topic, the proof of the Bloch theorem. I can safely erase this. So Bloch's theorem. theorem. I will write down so how the Bloch's theorem is formulated word for word. Namely, the eigenvalues, of Hamiltonian H, that is represented in this form, H bar squared divided by 2m delta squared Laplacian plus U of R with U of R plus large R equal to U of R small, large R belonging to a Bravais lattice. Can be chosen actually not eigenvalues but eigenfunctions. So sorry, the eigenfunctions. Yeah, I have a typo in my notes that I have just realized. Can be chosen in the form, psi as a function of R equal to E in power I KR. Actually, this psi is also supplied with index small k. Times U, first index k as a function of R, and I will say with U k of R equal to U, U is small here to U k R small plus R large. In fact, this is the formulation of the Bloch's theorem that I will prove, but talking about something that I will illustrate quickly after the proof, this solution, this set of eigenfunctions is additionally characterized by another index n here. N. And K belongs to the first Brillouin zone and is called quasi-momentum or crystal momentum. Some people like to call it crystal momentum, saying that the word quasi-momentum is quite inappropriate in this case. And N, and small, E is just an integer, typically ranging from either 0 or 1 up to infinity. And N is called band index. The occurrence of this band index won't follow exactly from the proof I will give just in a second, but can be illustrated based on some subsequent considerations. Quasi-momentum K belongs to the first Brillouin zone. Yes, and the remaining 15 minutes of the lecture will be spent to prove this theory. I will give the proof that one, that is one of two possible proofs. This proof is not that elegant, but nevertheless will contain the expression that will be useful for us tomorrow. So that's why I will just give you only one proof that is based on the Schrödinger equation. So, proof. So let's use the periodicity of functions psi and u. And we start from our original Schrödinger equation. So we choose this Hamiltonian and act on psi. If you have any questions, just ask me immediately. So minus I h bar squared divided by 2m nabla squared psi of r will be equal to, if we substitute the Fourier expansion, then we will just get the sum over q, h bar squared over 2m times q squared, psi as a function of q, e in power I q r. So this is the kinetic energy term. Then let's work with the term involving this potential energy that is periodic. U of r psi r will be equal to the sum over q and large k, the reciprocal lattice vectors, u as a function of large k's, then psi q e in power I k large plus q dot r. That can be written as follows. If we introduce q prime equal to q plus k large, then we will just have sum over large q and q prime u of as a function of large k's psi q prime minus k large times e in power I q prime r. We just made the substitution here. So if we substitute this guy and this guy into our Schrödinger equation, and the Schrödinger equation also involves energy, E times psi on the right, we will get the following. Returning back to the original notation of q, so I'm eating prime here. We have E in power I q dot r times, let me write it a little bit down so that you could easily see. Yeah, here, q, sum over q, e in power I q dot r, bracket here, h squared q squared divided by 2m minus e psi of q plus sum over large k, u of k psi q minus k equal to zero. This is just the Schrödinger equation written in momentum space. So you know that since all the Fourier components of this solution should be independent, then one must have the equality to zero, what stands in curly brackets independently. So this all should be equal to zero for each value of q. So we have the condition of equality to zero of this expression. This is just the dual formulation of one and the same Schrödinger equation done in momentum space. But we have just used an additional ingredient that we expanded the periodic potential in terms of components involving the reciprocal lattice vectors. So let's look at what stands in the square bracket. And one second. This is And do the following set. So choose Q equal to K small. I will write it this way. K small minus K large, where K small belongs to the first Brillouin zone. And relabel K large prime equal to K large prime minus just K. Okay, and get the following equation, H squared divided by 2M, K small minus K large minus E psi K small minus K large plus sum over K large prime. This is just the sum over all the reciprocal lattice vectors of U K large prime minus K psi K small minus K prime equal to 0. Where so square divided by 2, where square? Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Yeah. So again, this is just one more form of the Schrodinger equation. We simply made some relabeling and shifts of my momentum. So what is essential is that K small belongs only to the first Brillouin zone. So let's look at the system of those equation. And let's fix K small belonging to the first Brillouin zone. What do we see? We see the system of equations in which this fixed K that contains the functions of momentum, of momenta, in which this vector K small is shifted by all possible reciprocal lattice vectors. So if K small belonging to the first Brillouin zone is fixed, then we have the system, then this the system of equations, the system determines the Fourier component psi of K small, psi of K small minus, say, K prime, then psi of K minus K large double prime, and so forth. These are all possible reciprocal lattice vectors. K belongs to the first Brillouin zone. These vectors do not belong to the first Brillouin zone. Instead, they belong to subsequent Brillouin zone. But the most important that K is shifted by all possible reciprocal lattice vectors. And we obtained an interesting result that if we look at the general Fourier expansion, then this Fourier expansion can be split into certain portions in which Q is represented in this form. One vector from the first Brillouin zone minus all possible reciprocal lattice vectors. This means that the portion of this series with only one fixed K belonging to the first Brillouin zone gives us the solution of the Schrodinger equation. So this implies that the eigenfunctions can be chosen in this form. psi with first index k equal to e in power I k, yeah, k small dot r times the sum over all reciprocal lattice vector large k. So psi k minus k large e in power minus I k large dot r. And this is nothing else than our function u k of r that is periodic due to the presence of these reciprocal lattice vectors equal to u k of r plus r. So this essentially completes the proof of Bloch's theorem, except one thing. Where does the band index come from? Exactly, just 5 more minutes. Yeah. Where does band index n come from? The reason is as follows. If we take this solution to the Schrodinger equation, so yes, in this form, and substitute it once again back to the Schrodinger equation, we will have that H acting on, so our, let's put forward the following issue. We have determined the form of the solution, but we still have to determine the u of k. So in order to do this formally, of course, we plug this form of the solution back and can write down the following. H acting on this times only u can be written in the following form. H by square root divided by 2m, here 1 over I delta plus k small square root plus u of r, here u k of r equal to e of k times u k. E is the energy that we already know should be also the function of quasi-momentum k. So let's look attentively at this equation. And u, and we know that u kr satisfies the periodicity condition r small plus r large. Let's look carefully at this equation. This is due to this condition, the equation, the Schrodinger equation, some Schrodinger equation that needs to be solved for the function obeying periodic boundary conditions, this time in a primitive cell, not in a large box, how for the case of psi, but just in the primitive cell. So this is Schrodinger equation for u k obeying periodic boundary conditions on a primitive cell or unit cell. And whenever we have the Schrodinger equation for the particle moving in a closed space, we have the additional discrete set of indices n. This is what we know from the general theory of solutions of the Schrodinger equation. Hence, additional index n. So that's why it is wise, while stating the Bloch's theorem, to supply all our eigenfunctions with additional band in index n. So during today's tutorial, you will see how the band structure arises, and you will be able to see using one simple delta functional potential that the spectrum is actually split on zones characterized, zones or bands characterized by index cell. And two more minutes will be used for just two notes. So you, if you have any questions, ask me afterwards. So everything is quite important. Okay, what is not important rewritten on the front board of the left side of this room. And I will erase this. Note one. So quasi-momentum K belongs to the first Brilouin zone. And all K prime shifted by any of the reciprocal lattice vectors are equivalent. That's why we talk about the eigenfunctions and eigenvalues of our Hamiltonian only specifying K within the first Brilouin zone and band index. So because of this, the eigenfunctions psi and k of r are the same if we shift k small by any of the reciprocal lattice vector k large. And the same is for energies. Okay. E n k equal to E n comma k small plus k large. K small plus k large. Or alternatively, people say use E with band index kept down and quasi-momentum k placed in the bracket. So this is just a different form of writing the energy. And note two tells us about the following precaution. Quasi-momentum K small should not be confused with standard quantum mechanical momentum, should not be confused with h bar divided by I times Nabla. Why? Because psi k n r are not eigen functions of the standard quantum mechanical operators. And this is what you're invited to check. That's all, my friends, for today. I'm late by 5 minutes. And if you have any further questions, just ask me.